We're going to go ahead and read and then do the scriptures or whatever. We'll start in there. Work in paradise. I like the way it's got the question mark there. God knew that a man with nothing would do, or nothing to do, wouldn't be happy. As a part of the perfect paradise, God gave man, when he first created him and put him in the Garden of Eden, he gave Adam a job to dress and keep the garden. Genesis 2:15. Wealthy and wise King Solomon, after spending a lifetime trying to find a secret of happiness, commented, "There is nothing better for a man than to rejoice in his work." Let's go ahead and read in Genesis.
Then the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and keep it.
I always think it's a very important thing, you know, well, we have it. Man's not willing to work, he shouldn't eat or whatever. But there's a, when, at the end of the day when you're tired, but there's a good tired, which is that you sleep well when you feel good when you've done that work. So. You what? Oh, sorry. Can you find it? Did you find it?
Okay. I had one, but I wasn't with you.
Not many people are. I'm in my own little world. I know everybody here, Tiffy. Okay, and as Solomon said, I find that very interesting that King Solomon said that, who really is the wisest man. There's nothing better for a man than to rejoice in his work. And there is something when you finish a product, your pride can be a scary thing, you know, but you have a joy in that you've done something, you've finished it or whatever.
You know, I kind of know what they're talking about here because I love to work in the yard. It doesn't look like it right now.
It's spring. We're getting there.
But if I get through like with a flower bed and I can stand back and look at it, be pleased, I feel good all over.
Jim and I, we just redid our kitchen or whatever, and we had one thing where we paid somebody else to do because it was too expensive a product and we didn't want to break anything. But we did the floors and we did the backsplash. There's a lot of work, and you soon realize, okay, we're not as young as you used to be, or whatever. But we've sat back, and he has so many times come in the kitchen. I really, really like what we did. He's content with what we did, and it's a nice feeling. It's going to be the last time we probably do it ourselves, but hey, we'll say the do-it-yourself. We paid for it and watch somebody else do it. Okay. Most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be, observed Abraham Lincoln. Perhaps one of the most valuable characteristics of maturity is to be able to make yourself to do the thing you ought to do when it ought to be done, whether you like it or not. Self-discipline is far more than father of success than either talent or genius. God paraphrased this incessantly in Ecclesiastes 9:10 when he said through Solomon, "Whatever thy hand find to do, do it with thy might." I like that one. Okay. That is something... Okay, I'm from Illinois. Abraham Lincoln is from there. Okay. So we growing up in my household, we knew a lot of things that Abraham Lincoln, because it was more, it's the land of Lincoln in Illinois. But my mother raised me to, both my parents or whatever, whatever you do to the very best of your ability. And it was always very much imprinted on us that your name is on everything you do. It's not somebody else's name. It's your name, and your name is all that you have. That's what your name is what you have of value. And she would literally tell us, "You're born naked, but you're given your name. You know, this is what you have. This is yours. Everything else is just a minor thing, but that is your name. Nobody else can claim it. If you borrowed something, you either gave it back the same, preferably better." That was what she'd always tell us. So there was a thing in that, and you always make the most of what you did. You can choose to be happy or you can choose to be sad. You look at, you know, either half full, the glass half empty or half full. Good.
Well, it's like you said, whatever you do it well for your own self, mm-hmm. for your self-esteem. But the fact is that if you do it poorly, you're probably going to have to do it again, or you're not going to be happy with what came out of that, right? You know, so there's some real pragmatic consequences to that. If you don't finish it the way it ought to be done, in 2 weeks, you go back and do it over. Right. It's just not worth it.
And I always love the saying with my mother, if you don't have time to do it right the first time, well, why would you have time to do it right the second time? And it always made sense to us because if you don't have time to do it right that first time, you're not going to have time to go back and fix it. And if you try to go back and fix it, it's going to be worse. So she was always like with sewing, if you made a mistake, you took it out and you redid it, but you did it right or whatever, yes. I was brought up with that kind of moral, which I'm thankful for. But to do it with your... there should be somewhat of an honor when you do things for other people or whatever. And there's a lot of joy in that, giving of yourself in that way. Okay, anything else?
Okay. And when you do it well and have that sense of accomplishment, you have a better outlook, mm-hmm. and others see that, especially right. your children. You know, if you grumble and groan about having to do it, then that's going to fall over into what they do.
I'm finding it's quite funny. In the class, Tracy and Brad ordered these in the Bible, in the kids' Bible class, wherever. We're doing these. We're taking the Bibles and we're taking, it's got like a template, and we're outlining areas. Like, we studied anger, and there were 8 passages on anger, and you outline it, and then we're studying complaining. And one of the things that was interesting, I said, well, if something breaks, I have to be grateful that I have enough money to fix it. Well, yesterday, our TV died. It started smoking and everything. And last night, we get home, and I'm like, I'm like, okay, Jim, we have to count our blessings. We have enough money to buy a new one. But it was like, so I was thinking of Caroline last night, because she's in the class, and I thought, I said that, but I didn't really think it. But it was, it came true very quickly. Okay. Does somebody else want to read in here, maybe?
What do you want?
The first dill pickle, right there.
I'll read.
Okay.
If you have something to do which you feel sure you're going to hate, try giving yourself just 5 minutes of the task. Promise no more, just 5 minutes. Someone once said that the first dill pickle out of the jar is always the hardest, and that's the way it is with unpleasant tasks. Our dread of the job is usually a lot more ominous than the job itself. Once we get started, it's usually no problem at all to go ahead and finish, whether it's cleaning out that kitchen drawer or going next door to talk to your neighbor about Christ.
That is true. You know, on the back of our book, it also, it's like, it's very easy to talk, but it's not always easy to communicate. So,
I just had an itch.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
But that is true. If you go into it with a pessimistic attitude, it's going to bring you down before you ever get there. It's kind of funny. At my age, and I'm very much a list person. I have a structure to my cleaning, everything. But I honestly treat myself almost like I treat my kids with certain things. I don't get to do this thing until I finish these tasks. And then when I get there, it sounds funny, but it's like the kid in the candy store. I've got my prize, I've earned it, and I feel good about getting there. I still do that at my age. But it helps me get my tasks.
Mother and I were talking about that the other day, that if you're not careful, the things you just enjoy doing,
you'll do
all the time.
Right.
The time factor will become far more than it should. You know, hobbies are great, but if I just let myself sit down and read, because I would read all day, that'd be okay with me.
You get lost
in it. Then there's that whole I didn't cook dinner or do the laundry thing. So you have to parcel out those little rewards. I will do this, and then I'll get to sit down and read 2 chapters.
And it's real easy to get distracted. I know. I am not a quick reader, so when I sit down and read, I don't finish the book, but I will just sit and read and I get lost in it, where I could read for hours. Mm-hmm. That's during the day after I've done my chores. Yes.
Right.
But I will sit and read. That's a good example. Okay. Anybody else? Nobody's going to talk today, really. It's just Jean and I.
No. talk.
Okay. But it is very important. I can relate to this one. Very clearly. And as much as I'm a talker, people, it is very difficult for me to go up and meet somebody. Everybody's always amazed by that, but it's a big anxiety thing with me. Going up to meet somebody for the first time, once I get there, and I'm okay. But it's a long walk to get there. It is. It's hard. And I have really worked on that the past few years when people come in or whatever. And we sit at the back. I do that for health reasons or whatever, but when you sit up here, I used to sit up here because it keeps me very focused on what Stan is saying. But then I would miss all the visitors. But you sit back there, but then you see everything that goes on, and it's real easy to get distracted sometimes, but at least I catch the visitors now. But going up and meeting them is it's very much a challenge for me. I know everybody's amazed, but it is. but that one I can definitely deal with, so.
She said an itch again.
Okay.
Itchy classroom.
Do you read better than tea leaves? It really is important to take some time periodically to consider what we communicate through our work. Our work communicates a lot more about us than we may realize. It tells others whether we are dependable or unreliable, industrious or lazy, pleasant, dispositioned or ill-tempered. It even reveals whether we are happy or discontent with our lot in life. So the Christian who would teach others must make sure he lets the joy of Christianity show in his work. If we work away from home, we must be careful not to communicate some very negative messages. Through our attitude, when we're tired and the kitchen is still a mess, we may convey to our husband, I wouldn't have to work if you support me better. Or are we even ever guilty of suggesting to our children that I'd go batty if I had to stay home with you all day? If your children complain more than normal about helping out around the house, this might again indicate a need to take a closer look at what we are communicating through our own work.
I think that one applies very much to our society today, or whatever. I find very interesting with when Josh did the, I think it was Wednesday night, I believe, he did the talk or whatever, but when he was talking about the duties or whatever of the man and the woman. And he said, you know, when he was talking about a woman working, and but he also went to the man or whatever, but he said, but you can't neglect your other duties, which I was like, oh, don't do there, don't go there. But I was so proud of Josh when he came back and he said it the way he did, and he said, but you can't neglect your other duties. There's nothing wrong with going out and working, you know, and doing this sort of, but we need to do the jobs that God has intended us to do, and we need to do them with a joy. Sounds funny, but me keeping my house gives me a joy. Well, I'm hoping that y'all.
This doesn't sound funny.
No, nobody. I knew I needed a hobby when I looked forward to the warm water with doing the dishes. That was like a good moment in my day. I was like, oh, that was my spa moment, doing the dishes, you know. But it's like it's a very good feeling for me when I finish all my housework. My house is clean. It's a nice feeling, and I'm disappointed sometimes when I will work really hard or whatever. They come home, nobody says anything, and you're kind of waiting for that little, you know, rot, and it doesn't come sometimes. But you don't know what I'm saying.
No, I do absolutely. Oh. Here's how you fix that. Oh. Look what I did.
Yeah, I want to do that, but then I'm like, no, I'm doing it for the wrong reasons.
No, it's just verification.
You're waiting for it, but I know. But you're kind of like.
No,
when
no.
It doesn't come. So
I dragged Roger up to the closet and opened the door.
Look,
see
what I did. Yes.
No.
That's not doing it for the wrong reason. Everybody likes to be praised right. for their work,
well,
regardless of what right. they do. And you're absolutely right to, at some point, expect the kids and the hubby to say something.
I know they don't.
Maybe even a friend would come in and say, wow, you look clean today.
Oh, yeah. But it's all, he doesn't come in order.
Your house is always clean.
Yeah, mine's not. It was funny because little Marley said to me, it was about 2 weeks ago, she said, how do you keep your house so clean all the time? And I'm like, I pick up after myself when I do things or whatever. She's like, and I'm thinking, it's kind of funny, my children are grown, but my house is messier now than it was when my kids were little, and I'm trying to figure this out in my head, and I can't. I'm like, I think I was more on task when they were little, so.
It can backfire on you. Nobody in my house will put anything away in the linen closet.
Because you clean it, right?
I said,
don't
I see no
there.
Reason why the linen closet should ever be messy. You have clean things folded neatly, you put them away. Yeah. It shouldn't. So they don't put anything away. They stack it and let
it. Stack it there? I know, I was telling Jiffy, I said, I have a saying now, when the Scroggins gets in there at my house or whatever, I'll go, wait, oh, what's today? And then we'll go, you know, today's Tuesday. Oh, she's not coming. The maid is not coming today, so you have to do it yourself. So now they know this thing. I even tell the kids in the class, you have to put your stuff in. The maid's not coming today. You know, they have to put their stuff away.
I really am raising my hand.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just thinking that it is a matter also of training your family to appreciate what you do, because mm-hmm. what we do is valuable, mm-hmm. and we need to understand that.
Very much
and
so.
And they do too, because they're going to have to pick it up.
Well, sorry.
When they're grown or when we're sick or something.
Right. Well, when they leave the house, you want
they
them
do.
To be.
Well, they're supposed to.
They're supposed to? Yeah.
Yes, I left town for 3 days.
I know.
I know.
Been sick and strong.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm. I can't complain. Jim is good about that.
I have to give my husband credit for teaching the children to appreciate.
Yes. That is a nice thing.
Yes. I remember very well. My dad's a very neat person by nature. It's not what Mother taught him, although I'm sure she could have if she had needed to. But he told me one time, he said, clothing should never hit the floor.
Right.
There's never a reason why clothes should be on the floor. If they're dirty, they belong in the hamper. If they're clean, they belong on a hanger. There's no reason.
And you better believe I'm never putting clothes on the floor.
Yeah, it could be detrimental to your
health. Yes.
I know, and that is important. My husband, Jim, when he was in the Marine Corps, whatever, he's retired, but he flew, and he was gone a lot or whatever. But I would always make the point of telling the kids, Daddy could not do what he does if I was not here taking care of you, and I could not be here taking care of you if he was not providing for the family. So it's a thing like that. I always try to give Jim the respect in the house that way. And I think that's very important. I've told my kids over many times, a family is a well-oiled machine. If that one gear is out of whack, it throws, because then I have to do double time to make up what they haven't done. And it is. It's a team effort as a family. So, and they can do the smallest thing can make a big difference in the, you know, the day or whatever. When my kids were little, I did this for my mother. We called it chore potluck. I'd stick all the chores on a piece of paper, and every Saturday, and we'd fold them up, put them in the thing, and they got to pick their chores, and they could trade them with one another, but they had to agree or whatever, and then we'd go do something fun, like go to the library or go to something. And they liked it. They looked forward to it. It was fun or whatever, but everybody did their thing, and they had to do it good, because otherwise we didn't get to go. But it was, they still remember that to this day, and I'm pretty sure they're going to do this with their children, because they kind of talk about it in a joking way, but they'll say. They're more like mom than they want to. So, okay. Anything else on that one? Okay. Whatever you say, sir. That's what they're. Now, let's consider a woman's relationship with her boss. If she works at home, her husband is her boss, and hopefully she has a great relationship with him. But what about that hard-hearted, unappreciative tyrant down at the office? It is a little fearsome what a book as deeply spiritual as the Bible can at the same time be so practical. But consider these verses about our relationship with those from whom we work. Servants, you must respect your masters and do whatever they tell you, not only if they are kind and reasonable, but even if they are tough and cruel. That's 1 Peter 2:18. Christian slaves should work hard for their owners and respect them. Never let it be said that Christ's people are poor workers. Don't let the name of God or his teaching be laughed at because of this. 1 Timothy 6:1. I think that is very important. I, for the most part, I always wanted to be home. I did whatever I had to do to be at home with my kids. And I'm fortunate my parents taught me things where I could do that or whatever. But there have been times where I have worked out of the home. And I've only had one boss that was bad, and that was my first boss. When I was 13, I started working. I was a car rep at an A&W. I don't know if you know that. But anyway, and he was not a good, his business got closed down because of him, so he was not a good man order. But everybody, after that, I've always worked for good people, so I've not necessarily had the, when I'm older and I had the tyrant boss. Has anybody ever had one of those?
All of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, all but one of them.
Really? Yes. Oh, so sorry. Yes. See, now that makes it difficult, because you are supposed to keep your, you're supposed to be that example, and we can't grumble underneath our breath, and that would be challenging, because you're going to work to provide.
Yes. One of the things that helps, and I've got those too, is that you, if you can look past that person to what the work is really about.
Right.
I mean, when I worked for Head Start, I had two very awful bosses, and I had to keep reminding myself what we're doing is for these kids. And so I'll have to deal with this person over here, but my ultimate reason for being here, you know, is over there for the kids. And it helps a little bit to kind of bypass them in your mind. You can't bypass them. You have to do what they say to do, and you have to work hard for them. But if you can kind of think about the reason that you're doing it. It's the same thing at home. When you get bored, or when I was going to quit work, when Clay was born, I had so many people say, oh, you're going to be bored, because I had worked since I was 15. And I said,
no.
Maybe a day or two, but I'm bored here every now and then too. So,
you know, we always model what we don't have. Well, when I worked at Red Lot before, when we lived in Illinois, I had to work for a while. Jim was not allowed to hold a second job, what his job was in the Marine Corps. So if we ever had to supplement our income, depending on what we did, I had to work. But I worked at Red Lobster, and I worked during the day. I worked during the day, and I talked with them, and I was able to open up the alley, you know, in the morning or whatever, and they were really good anyway. But there were people there. It wasn't so much my bosses, but there were people there that definitely were not Christianly, you know, walking around. But I would sing hymns. I would, you know, how we're singing in the morning or whatever. And I remember the owner coming to me one time, and I was not aware that he was watching. And he came up behind me and he said, "You are so wonderful to work with." And I kind of was, and he goes, "You're always singing. You're just so happy. That's what we want." And I didn't want to tell him, "Well, there's a reason I'm singing." But that was, I was like, I was portraying a good image, but it was, I always remember that. And I kind of chuckled. I thought, okay.
Were you singing Master the Tempest?
No. I would sing that it would keep me on track, and I would remember. I had in my thing, I would have a picture of my family, and I was like, okay, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm here. So I know, but I always thought that was funny when he came and told me that. So.
I found that the lessons of Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego were very helpful. They had adult conversations with their rulers and told them no. And so yes. It's sometimes you have to do that, and sometimes you have to accept. One of the last bosses I had fired me every. Threatened to fire me every time I told them no. And I finally just said, okay, you do what you have to do, but I can't do this. It's not
you know what, and they may not say that, but they respect you for holding that ground. They may not say that to you, but they do. You have to respect. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, but they have to respect you. Deep with, they may not tell you that, but you've stood your ground, and you've stood for something that's moral. So,
yeah.
Yes, I know. Okay. Anybody else? Okay. And we always have to remember, too, as a Christian, we are showing what it is to be a Christian. So whatever you do, if you see somebody who's a Christian, you see them do something bad, unfortunately, sometimes it'll wipe out all that good, and that's what they remember, that bad, and we kind of have to remember that. So make a memory of that. Okay, and talking about what we just read, this reference was obviously referring to the slave-master relationships of Paul's day, but the principle is still the same. Many employees would claim that even the relationship is much the same. Other traits a worker is cautioned against having are slothfulness, Romans 12:11, dishonesty, Jeremiah 22:13, and wastefulness, Proverbs 18:9. I wanted to read those. So, Romans 12. Let's call Patsy. Do you want to read Jeremiah 22:13? Mm-hmm. Carol, do you want to read Proverbs 18:9? Or can you read? You got to call. Okay. I'll go to Romans 12:11. Not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Okay, that's the one about slothfulness and dishonesty. Patsy?
Jeremiah 22:13. Yes. Woe to him who builds his house by unrighteousness and his chambers by injustice. He uses his neighbor's service without wages and gives him nothing for his work.
And wastefulness. Carol?
He who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer.
And in fact, if all Christians really lived up to the principles of Christ, they would be in demand by employers everywhere and would need no other recommendation than that they were a Christian. A Christian woman should be the best employee in her company because she is a Christian. That is so true. People may not always know that you're a Christian, if you don't say anything, but they should be able to see that you're that different kind of a person. You're moral and you stand for one thing. When I worked at Red Lobster, it used to frustrate me to know that people, when you get hired, they're telling you, you're going to work these hours, this is how much you're going to pay, this is how much, and then you have people, they don't pay me enough, this is what they have to do, and they weren't asking them to do anything else, but it's like all of a sudden it was no more, you know, it's like when a 16-year-old gets a job, it's only fun for their first paycheck, and then they realize, hey, the government's taking all my money or whatever, but I mean, we are told what we're supposed to do, and some bosses may tack on things or whatever, but we do that, and we do it to the best of our abilities, and you'd be grateful that you're earning that wage or whatever. So we should never be slothful. Jim went through a point where he had lost one of his jobs. He got laid off, and he worked for a man who did aluminum siding, and he came home one day, and I could tell that he was very distraught, and but he said, I need to quit my job. And we were so tight. And he was making $8 an hour providing for a family of four. It was very, very tight. And I was like, what's wrong? And he said, he found out that his boss, when he would go sell to people, he would say, you know, you can have A, B, or C. But no matter what they ordered, he would still always put on the cheapest. And when Jim found that out, it really bothered him. You know, it was an ethical thing or whatever. And I said, oh, by all means, you know. And we reported the man for what he did. You know, it's the first time I got to deal with the Better Business Bureau and different things like that. But it was hard for me. I remember Jim, he was so worried because here he was providing for his family, and it was very difficult for him. And it turned out something better came along, you know, whatever. But it was challenging because he found out that this man was doing wrong or whatever, and it was an ethical thing. But he was a good employer. He showed up, he did what he was supposed to, but when he found out that, he had to quit or whatever. But
he did what he was supposed to.
He did. But I still remember it really, you know, you're kind of looking at him and thinking, did somebody die? He looked very, very distraught or whatever. But, and we shouldn't be, you know, and these things, we shouldn't be wasteful. We shouldn't. Dishonesty is very common, unfortunately.
But. And you shouldn't take the paper clips.
Right. That is such a thing we never
else.
Yes, it's not ours to take. Yes.
And I've known so many people, they say, well, they won't miss it.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's not yours to take.
You know, I might have $400 in my billfold. Not that I ever do. But I might have. And if somebody took five, they could say, well, she won't miss it because it's such a small part of.
But it's still not yours.
It's mine.
Right.
Yes. If I ever have $500 in my billfold, I'll let y'all know.
How much more?
But, you know.
Okay. Okay, we're good. Okay, you cannot serve, two masters. Is that Jesus? Okay. God gives one clear exception when we should not obey our boss, and that is if his directions clash with God's. In Acts 5:29, Peter spoke up bravely before the council with these words: we ought to obey God rather than men. That's something that we should just drill in our mind. It's just, I mean, we see man in front of us. I think that's why sometimes it's so difficult. If God was standing right there and it was men, I think it'd be a very easy choice, you know, if he was standing right there.
Right.
But he's not visible to us in that way. So I think that's a lot of reason why we can succumb to evil like that or whatever. But, yes, we always have to remember. I was thinking, at the end, he knows all these things, even if we're the only person in that room, you know, and he knows. So we must stop and think seriously about our allegiances if our boss asks us to follow dishonest practices, do something morally questionable, or even work on Sundays. The Christian woman must be aware or be sure that in every compartment of her life she is able to put God's will first. I like that. I just think it's very pretty. I think I have found with my own too, just the littlest thing. When I get too discombobulated would be a good word. When I get too and think, it's so easy, you almost think, you know, we have our scripture where it says a little leaven, leaven the whole lump. But not in an evil way, but that little sidetrack, when I get off track, it's just easier to go a little bit more and stuff. I have to keep myself, well, it's like studying scripture. There's a reason we do that every day, to keep us on track or whatever. But even with my chores or different things like that, if I let this go this day, I need to do double time the next to keep up or whatever. Because unfortunately, it's still there the next day. Nobody does it for me, so. Okay. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. He cannot serve God and mammon. That one, the one thing that always gets me about this is when it says, and this is the words through God, he's going to hate the one and love the other. So that always, I mean, that's just a, it's not, you're just going to not, you're not obeying this. When you're obeying the bad thing here, it's like you're hating God. And that's a, well, that's very powerful in that way or whatever. When we're not showing God the love and respect that we should be when we're not obeying him or whatever. But when he says, when you don't obey, you hate the one. And that's powerful to me. So, anybody? You're quiet today. Working in the world is not easy for men or women. And we must be sure that we are just as Christ-like at our job as we are on Sundays. A lot of times, you know, you may have people here or whatever, and you see them, and when you see them at a job, they may be a whole different person or whatever, and it shouldn't be that way or whatever, you know? We shouldn't take a job.
Business doesn't work.
Right, and it doesn't. I see a lot, you know, I've seen a lot of people in the church that have worked, not necessarily here, but that have worked, you know, like for the breweries or different things like that, and they're just doing a job, but it's the example that it sets, you know, or whatever. So So, and it's, and they, and you, when you have to try to justify it within yourself, you know that there's a problem in that way or whatever. So,
I think with that specific example, past that, you can say you're contributing to people killing other people on the road.
Yes.
I mean, there, that one has such a real outcome that it's not as, you know, some of the other jobs that I don't think people ought to be doing because they're Christians aren't as easy to pinpoint.
That means right.
You're distributing something that a lot of people are going to drink, and some of them are going to kill somebody else when they
right.
do it.
That's very true. That's it, yes.
That one's easy for me to see the answer to.
Yeah. But there is, there's a lot of things or whatever, you know, and we don't always, and the, this is the one thing, I mean, and the kids in the class get it at their age of six or whatever. There's nobody else. You're never by yourself. God sees where, you know, you can think nobody's watching because it's just you, but He knows. And I always remember that every knee shall bow. It's not because, you know, your knee's going to be forced. You're going to bow because you're going to know who it is. So, but we're going to be accountable for everything we do or whatever. But we do have to make those right choices. And that's a very common pull in the world. Money, money, money. I mean, we saw that last night behind the TV. But, you know, the irony of this was Jim kept... There's people at his work or whatever, they were at Sam's. They go on Thursdays or whatever they do with their hot dog day, and they go, you know, and two of the guys bought these TVs. And Jim kept teasing, oh, I want this one, I want this one. So when the TV broke, Lil Riley was over there, and she's like, Mr. TV, or Mr. Jim, the TV's dead. You broke it. You know? And I said, yes, he did. And I go, did you do this on purpose? He goes, no, no, no. And I go, I'm beginning to wonder, you've been talking about the TV. But let's, they have all of these TVs, and there's so much money or whatever. You know, and I'm like, I told Jim when I was talking last night, I said, I'm very much a cash person. I do not like credit at all. But I was telling him, I said, it's really hard for me to give this cash. It really is, because it is. It's very hard for me. And I said, because I, you know, it's mine. If I give that up, I don't have that emergency cash there anymore. And, but it was funny, we're looking at it, and I'm like, just get this, go ahead and get what you want or whatever, and we'll get it. But it was there or whatever. I was like, we could, the one guy's like, oh, well, you need this, and you need this. I'm like, no, I'm just getting this. This is it. This is all we're getting. I'll come back. But you can, they're just, their jobs are to sell you all this and this and this, you know. And it was like, no, this is it. This is enough. I'm content with this, you know, or whatever. But I know Mark came home last night, and he's like, oh, there's a new TV in the room. I'm like, it broke. We didn't just go buy a new one. So.
My husband took our car, or his car, yesterday up to the shop to do some little something. I can't even remember what it was. And we just had this big thing with our house flooding, and of course we had to pay a portion of that. And all. He came back and he said, well, Mr. Martin looked at the tires and he decided that we should have a new set of tires. Oh, $600.
Yep. I know. Mm-hmm. But see, then I have to go, but we have the money to pay for this, so that's a blessing. That is.
We were
at a point where we didn't have that, you know, so I'm grateful for what we have now, but I know it's like...
But whatever you were going for with windshield wipers.
I know. You go for the candy bar and you come home with the new refrigerator. I know. Yes, I know. Okay. Let's see. All right, let's do the one.
Do you think I'm rich?
Oh, no, I know.
Not anymore, at least.
Mark thinks we're rich because I always pay cash, but I'm like, yeah, but I save for that.
Yeah.
Our kitchen that we just did, I saved for a year and a half to do all that, so mm-hmm. I know. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they see that part, not the...
But it's that real delicate balance between being a good steward, as we're told to do, and taking care of needs,
right.
But not... overindulging ourselves
not
in
keeping up
the
with
pleasures
the
of the world. I mean, it's a fine line in there.
Boy, and you're
walk.
Just inundated with
mm-hmm.
it. You know, so. I know Jim said, okay, I'm going to share one of my weirdities here. I love, when we're watching TVs, I will sing along with the commercials. I love to sing. But I will sing along with the commercials. And I still remember back in grade school one time, we were in school, and we had a public television. They brought something in or whatever, and there was a furniture commercial, and they had this little jingle or whatever. And I'm sitting in there just kind of singing to myself or whatever. And I turn around, and there's like three people staring at me or whatever. And they still, I know these people today, and they still make fun of me because of that. But the other day, we have a TiVo thing where we're recording, we just go through it, and I said, Jim, stop, I want to see that commercial. And he looks at me and goes, you're the only person I know who likes commercials or whatever. But I'm like, but the commercials, we were laughing. My friend Michelle was telling me, she goes, oh, you're the kind of people that people, or you're the kind of people that advertisers love because you like those commercials. So no, I like the jingles. I don't necessarily like what they're saying or whatever. But if you notice now, I was like, when did kids get so much strength in that? They appeal to kids. They want them to buy, but our kids are being raised where I want, I gotta have.
And somebody is letting them do it.
Right.
Because kids won't say, I want, if they don't think there's some chance of getting it.
Oh, you see that in the store. Oh, my. Mm-hmm. It's just ridiculous, you know, and you see the kids screaming. But you want to reach out and touch them, but you can't. But you see that. It's very, yes, I want, and you want more or whatever. And I see it. When we go to Sam's or whatever, I'll go for groceries, and I'll have my list or whatever. But I see so much stuff that's just neat stuff. Just stuff, and it's like, you know.
But you have to be hard-hearted enough with your kids to say no. And there have been times that even today I feel bad that I had to say no to some things. I think of one particular instance when Clay wanted something, and we just could not afford it.
Couldn't afford it. Yeah.
And I had to tell him that, and he was a kid, and it made him very sad. And anyway, but I still don't think it was a wrong decision,
right,
to not do it. But it felt bad with Cole's at the house the other day. He wanted something different at lunch than what I was doing. I said, no, this is what we're having. But I want. I said, well, too bad.
Yeah. See, sorry. I think that's a good teaching thing that you're doing now.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten even that with Scrappers. When they're over, I'm like, this is what we're having for lunch. How hungry are you? This is what we're having, you know. Because I wasn't going to make the specialty food. So
it teaches them patience.
And you learn, so yes.
Well, and my time has something to do with it, too. No, sure, I've already made lunch. I'm not going to do another lunch. This is what we're having. This is
like appreciating what you do at home.
Like you said, how hungry are you?
Yes.
If you don't want to eat, okay.
Now.
But this is it.
This is what we're having, so. All right. Well, I guess we'll go ahead and stop. Let me see. Yes, we'll go ahead. Do you want me to finish that one page?
Whatever you want.
Okay, we'll stop.